If you believe assault is an act, not an adjective, your safety is not just on the gun, it is the gun. Freedom is a fundamental human right. Welcome to your show, Two-Way Radio with Bill Carnes. What do you believe? Your safety is your responsibility, not the government's, not anybody else's. Be a citizen, not a subject. Better yet, be a listener. Because it's an inalienable right, not a privilege. The Two-Way Radio Show with Bill Carnes is live, right now. Call 1-800-313-9443.
Yeah. Good morning, everyone. Man, that just gets you up and punches you right straight in the face, doesn't it? Man, I love that. Whether you like it or not, that rocks. Okay, here we go. Thank you very much, RJ Hinder and crew. Another fine addition. Thank you very much for sending your audience this way. I welcome everybody, good folks listening to RJ Hinder, and incorporated you in with the 2A Radio family. I'm feeling good. So, a little bit of housekeeping, guys. First of all, right here at RBN, Republic Broadcasting, we're always trying to spread the word and get the truth and the information out there to the masses. Well, we could always use a little bit of help from friends. So, for $8, $8, that's it, and it's flat fee, $8, you can get 100 generic RBN cards. I say generic because they don't have anybody's name and title on them that you can hand out. And these are good looking cards. These are not just some sort of cheap thing that came off a laser printer or bubble jet. These are very nice printed cards. Now, I come from a printing background. I was raised in a print shop. I know what good work is and I know what garbage shortcuts are. This is good looking stuff. For $8, you can get 100 of these cards to hand out. You can also, it also comes with a bumper sticker, that's included, as well as a free copy of Aaron Russo's America, From Freedom to Fascism. If you have not seen this particular video, it's a movie, it's a documentary that Aaron Russo did. It was his last project before he died of cancer. And RBN's own Dave Champion happened to be one of Aaron's consultants on this movie, because he goes into a lot of things dealing with taxes as well. It's a very, very encompassing movie. I saw this thing a couple years ago. It is great. And again, Dave Champion, he has his show here on RBN Monday through Friday at 3 o'clock in the afternoon Central Time. He has the hour just before John Stadtmiller comes on. So he had involvement in Freedom to Fascism. And with that being said, $8 is going to get you the 100 business cards, the bumper stickers, and Aaron Russo's Freedom to Fascism. And you can get that one of two ways. You can either send the $8 in to 2251 Double Creek Boulevard. That's two different words. Double, then Creek, I guess three different words, then Boulevard, Suite 302. Okay? That's in Round Rock, two different words, Texas, TX, 78664. Or you can call up. You can call 800-724-2719, Monday through Friday, 9 a.m. to 6 p.m. Central Time. 800-724-2719, Monday through Friday, 9 a.m. to 6 p.m. Central Time. And you can get all of this, the 100 cards, as well as the bumper sticker, as well as Aaron Russo's copy, From Freedom to Fascism, for $8. So take care of that. Got plenty of news, information, commentary, all that great stuff coming up in the rest of the show. So stay tuned. I'm your host, Bill Carnes, right here on 2A Radio.
Two-Way Radio with Bill Carnes is live. 1-800-313-9443.
Welcome back from the break, guys. So I want to let you know a little bit about a case that I came across. The information came to me. And I'm going to protect some of the people involved by just giving you the general information. Back about 4 or 5 years ago, there was a case where there was an older couple. As a matter of fact, the husband, a World War II veteran. For whatever reason, after many, many years of marriage, the wife decided she wanted a divorce. And it would seem as though that information was kept from the husband. Whether it was or not, I'm not entirely sure, but that's the way it sounded. So, the wife filed for a petition for divorce and also went in front of a judge and asked the judge if she could have her husband removed from the house and his guns taken into custody for what's referred to as safekeeping. Okay? The judge honored the petition for divorce but denied the provisions to remove the husband from his home, and also denied the provisions to take his guns into custody for safekeeping. Now, let's all keep in mind, there's a difference when it comes to legal matters between criminal matters and civil matters. Now, marrying, in some cases, might be a real crime if you see the people involved. However, it's technically all civil. Divorce is all civil. All right? So, civil matters are sometimes handled by police agencies, police, sheriff, you know, whatever it may be. Sometimes are handled by the city police or the county sheriff. Not always. Sometimes they're handled by an outside agency. Like in Clark County, Nevada, there are constables. And there's a constable for the city of Las Vegas who also does unincorporated areas of the Clark County that aren't otherwise filled. There's a constable in Laughlin, a constable in Moapa Valley, a constable in Mesquite, a constable in Sandy Valley, things like that. One in Henderson, one in Boulder City. Pardon me. So they would handle these sorts of civil dealings. Now, in this particular area that I'm talking about, it's in the Midwest. It's a state in the northern Midwest. A county sheriff's department actually handles these civil matters. Now, here's the other thing when it comes to serving people and handling civil matters. Has to be done during, like, regular daylight business type hours. You know, like maybe 7 or 8 in the morning till maybe 6, 7 in the evening. All right? Has to be handled during pretty normal daytime, Monday through Friday type business hours. This particular guy was served papers in the middle of the night, talking 2 or 3 in the morning, by a band of about a half dozen sheriff's deputies that had been given the information about the court papers, about the information dealing with the divorce. They did not look at the application for removal of this guy from his house, and they saw the application to take his guns into safe custody, safe possession. What they did not look was to see how it was adjudicated, because it was not adjudicated that they could kick the guy out of the house, and it was not adjudicated that they could take his guns. The judge clearly saw civil rights issues and said, no, we're not going to do this, lady. You can apply for anything you want, but that doesn't mean you're going to get it. However, the sheriff's department didn't see this. So these guys, during the middle of the night, graveyard shift, come and pound on the door, waking these people up, and they tell this guy, your wife filed for divorce, and to have you removed from the home, and to take your guns into safe custody. We're here to do that right now. Where's your guns? Get dressed, pack a bag. And in very short order, they took possession of all the guns, gave him a receipt for all the guns that they took, and kicked him out of his house in the middle of the night. So, 3-4 weeks later, he's in front of the judge. The judge says, look, I'm sorry all this went down. This was not supposed to happen this way. You can have your guns back. Go get your guns back. I suggest, it's not a requirement, but the judge suggested that he not be in, he can get the guns, but to not remain in possession of them during the divorce proceedings, just as a suggestion, just to cover his own butt. So the guy agreed, went and picked up the guns, I think it took another couple of weeks to actually get the sheriff's department to give him the guns, and then he took him to a relative's house and left him at the relative's house for the next year during the remainder of the divorce proceedings until it was finalized. Then he went and got his guns. He's filed a suit in federal court against the sheriff's department for violation of his civil rights. So, what I saw in this particular matter, where I see the real problem with what the sheriff's department did was, first of all, is called deprivation of rights. Now, deprivation of rights is exactly that. They're depriving you of your civil rights, something nobody can do. Your civil rights in this case, to keep and bear arms. Your civil rights as well to your personal property and your property rights, provided that the guy either owned the house that he was being kicked out of back a few years ago or had legal tenancy there and was current with the legal tenancy. Something tells me the guy was a World War II veteran, retired, probably owned his home. Very likely may have owned it outright. That I'm not exactly sure of. But any way you look at it, the deprivation of right to keep and bear arms, the deprivation of rights to your personal property, deprivation of rights to your property rights. As well as, I think the term is called abusive process. There might be a different term in federal court, but essentially it's abusive process. And that is by the sheriff's department executing civil manners during other than business hours. Specifically, the process of serving any sort of court order or injunction against somebody, in this case, it was a divorce proceedings. First of all, the process wasn't adjudicated. It wasn't approved when adjudicated. It was denied. The process to remove the guy from the home and take his guns was denied in the adjudication process. However, the sheriff's department didn't pay any attention to that, and they did it anyhow. And they didn't do it during business hours. It did it during the middle of the night. So that would be abusive process. Now, as I understand, this case is supposed to be going in front of a federal jury. It's supposed to go to court with a jury trial. I think, you know, like the reduced federal numbers, what do they do? Like six, I think? Seven? Whatever. I think it's six. Anyhow. From what I understand, the law firm representing the sheriff's department in this case offered a settlement. Now, we're talking basically a year without guns, but when it came down to the sheriff's department taking them, a month or more, maybe a month and a half, I forget the actual time. But and remove him from his house, forcibly remove him from the house. Because if he didn't move on his own, or if he didn't give him the guns, what were they going to do? They were going to arrest him. It's just an additional civil right violation. That would be deprivation of freedom. That would be false imprisonment is what it would be. They didn't do that. However, the guy cooperated. Said, okay, you know, I'm not going to put up a fight. There's six of you, one of me. So he didn't put up a fight. But the thing is, in the federal court, they're suing for damages. I don't know if they're specified or not. The law firm offered to settle for $9,000. Can you imagine that? What an insult. Look, here's three civil rights violations we did, and they're worth $3,000 apiece, in our estimation. Why don't you take and go away? Can you imagine? Can you imagine? I mean, I doubt that would even cover all of the attorney's fees, let alone attorney's fees and the percentage that the attorney's probably going to get on this deal. What an insult. Anyhow, as I see it, I'm thinking that the attorney needs to fight on the deprivation of rights, your civil rights, keep and bear arms, civil rights to personal property, and your civil rights to your property rights. And then also the whatever the federal technical term is for abusive process by them doing a civil matter during business hours. So they abused all the rights by executing a court order that was never authorized, thus doing these three civil rights. And then the abusive process by, even if it was approved, the abusive process by serving it in the middle of the night rather than during normal business hours. So that's how I see this case. This is the type of garbage that if you happen to be the victim of this kind of thing, fight, fight, fight. There are many organizations that will help you fight, fight, fight. One of them, even though they're not always very big when it comes to the gun stuff, is the ACLU, American Civil Liberties Union. I'm going to talk in the next segment about a couple of things dealing with the Las Vegas Metro Police Department and the Clark County Coroner's Office. I shouldn't say just Las Vegas Metro. It includes all law enforcement agencies in Clark County, including Henderson, Boulder City, North Las Vegas, and Mesquite, that ever have a fatal shooting involving a police officer. So stay tuned. We'll talk about that coming up in the next segment. I'm your host, Bill Carnes, right here on 2A Radio.
Have the alcohol and tobacco. Leave the firearms to us. Right now, the 2A Radio Show with Bill Carnes.
Welcome back, guys. Okay, so in Clark County, Nevada, where Las Vegas is, they have a deal called the Clark County Coroner's Inquest. And they use that whenever a cop shoots and kills a suspect. And in the years that they've had this thing, there's been 152 cases go in front of them. They have three options. Either it's a justifiable shooting, or it's an excusable shooting, or it's a criminal shooting. Of the 152-ish, only one has ever been ruled criminal. Now, I see a problem with having those three. I think there should be a fourth level. There's justifiable, okay, fine, you know, here's your gun and badge back and go back to work. There's excusable, okay, learn from this mistake, here's your gun and badge back, go back to work. And then there's criminal, okay, we're going to charge you with a crime. There should be a level in between, which is, we may not charge you with a crime, but you're no longer a cop. You had such poor decision and exercise it in such a poor manner that we could not possibly justify keeping you on as an armed centurion of society. Give us your gun, give us your badge, and hit the road. And I got to come up with a good name. I was actually having this discussion with Dave Champion a few weeks ago. He came up with a really good name for what should be this fourth segment, this fourth settlement of what it would be, how it would be adjudicated here. And I forget what it was. I should have written it down or put it in my BlackBerry or something. But that should really be an option, because there's a lot of times where cops shoot suspects and kill them, and they should be canned. They should be canned out on the street, out on their asses. They should not remain with a badge and a gun. However, they are, because unless it's overtly criminal, as in a cop just pulls out his gun and flat out cold blood murders somebody, that's just about the only time you're going to find something as criminal. All right? Which is wrong. Absolutely wrong. The system is flawed. The system is very flawed. I mean, a Metro cop shot a kid with a basketball a few years ago. Okay, he's back on the streets. detective shot a guy with a hero sandwich one time. They got back on the streets. A kid was shot with a, what was it, a baseball mitt or something? I forget what it was. Some other non-lethal object. Certainly not as lethal as a basketball. All right, I don't know. You might die from a basketball. Maybe if you're dribbling and you trip, you fall, you smack your head on a spike. Maybe. But the ball itself, I don't know. So then, of course, we have the case of Jim Dunsing we were talking about a few months ago. I talked with Jim. I spoke with him 3 days ago, I think. And here's the deal, is they went to an arraignment hearing. He's being charged with felony evading arrest, right? The cop shot him two or three times. He was hit at least twice, possibly a third time. They don't know if one bullet did two pieces of damage or if that was a third separate bullet. Not sure. So three rounds were fired. He had three injuries, either done by two or three bullets. So at the arraignment, evidently the judge was none too impressed with the police actions and the assistant district attorney in there arguing for the DA's office about these felony evading arrest charges. None too impressed at all. So she set it for a hearing date. That hearing date came, and the assistant district attorney announced that they were going to go for a grand jury indictment, which evidently really pissed the judge off plenty, because the judge doesn't like having stuff taken out of their hands. A grand jury, just so you understand, does not operate the way it was supposed to. And over the last 235 years of this country being around, it has been completely bastardized to the point where the prosecutors, in this case a district attorney, can basically put whatever the hell they want out there in front of the grand jury, and the defense is very, very limited in anything that they can bring up. So basically what's going to happen is the grand jury is going to hear, police shot this suspect, and we're now charging him with felony evading arrest because the cop articulated that he thought his life was in jeopardy or society was in jeopardy. So we want to have him indicted for felony evading police. So they're going to indict him. And then it'll take another year and a half to fight it and lots of money. So anyhow, had Jim died, this guy would have been able to get away with his story and probably would have had a justifiable shooting. Where now, what's most likely going to happen is Jim's going to get off of the charges after it takes a lot of time and money to do it, and win a rather sizable civil suit against the department. So you can see this coroner's inquest thing is very flawed. Stay tuned, plenty more to come after the break. I'm your host, Bill Carnes, right here on 2A Radio.
You're listening to the Republic Broadcasting Network, because you can handle the truth.
Gun control, loved by dictators since 1917. The 2A Radio Show with Bill Carnes is back. 1-800-313-9443.
Welcome back, guys. Okay, Vermont, one of our original 13 colonies, has a state representative by the name of Fred Maslach, M-A-S-L-A-C-K, who has read both the Second Amendment to the U.S. Constitution as well as the Constitution for the state of Vermont. He's read them very carefully. And he has a very strict interpretation of these documents. And that interpretation is popping quite a few eyeballs out in the New England area, as well as the rest of the country. Maslick recently proposed a bill to register non-gun owners and require them to pay a $500 fee to the state. Thus, Vermont would become the first state to require a permit for the luxury of going about unarmed and assess a fee of $500 for the privilege of not owning a gun. Now, some of you are thinking, that sounds pretty extreme and kind of crazy. Well, let's get into it. Maslick read the militia phrase of the Second Amendment as not only affirming the right of individual citizens to bear arms, but as a clear mandate to do so. He believes that universal gun ownership was advocated by the framers of the Constitution as an antidote to monopoly of force by the government, as well as criminals. Vermont's Constitution states explicitly that, quote, the people have a right to bear arms for the defense of themselves and the state, end quote. And those persons who are, quote, consciously scrupulous of bearing arms shall be required to pay such equivalent. Now, clearly, Maslick, according to Maslick, folks in Vermont have a constitutional obligation to arm themselves so that they're capable of responding to any situation that might arise, be it in its criminals, regular street thug, dirtbag bad guys, or for the defense of the state. Under the bill, adults who choose not to own a firearm would be required to register with their name, address, social security number, I don't know how he gets off with that, driver's license number with the state. And he also says there's a legitimate government interest in knowing who is not prepared to defend the state should they be asked to do so. Maslick says Vermont already boasts a high rate of gun ownership with the least restrictive laws of any state. Now, it's currently one of two states, Alaska being the other one, where citizens can carry a concealed handgun without having to apply for any kind of permit. Now, this combination of plenty of guns and very few laws regulating them has resulted in a crime rate that is the third lowest in the entire nation. Now, Maslick says America is at that awkward stage. It's too late to work within the system, but too early to shoot the bastards who've messed it up. Now, this makes a lot of sense. There's no reason why gun owners should have to pay taxes and fees to support police protection for people not wanting to own guns. Let them contribute their fair share and pay their own way. Cops are under absolutely no legal obligation to have to provide police protection to any individual citizen, per the United States Supreme Court. Protection is up to yourself. I'm prepared to protect myself. If I ever call the cops, it is not for a protection issue. By no means is it for a protection issue. Right? I can handle the protection on my own. I'm armed, and even more so, I'm trained. The training is much more important than the arming. I'll tell you that. Proper training, keeping your head up, figuring out how to deal with stuff, that is much more valuable than just having a gun. If you are trained in how to deal with stuff, you're aware, and you understand this sort of thing, that can keep you safe for the majority, if not the entirety of your life. Merely possessing a gun won't. You need both. Yeah, the most important thing is understanding how to deal with things. Understanding how to conduct yourself, a number one. If you have a gun, that is simply a tool in your bag of being able to protect yourself and your family. It's not the answer It is one of the pieces of the puzzle. Very, very important piece. So, good job in Vermont. Good job to State Representative Fred Maslach. So, there you go. I would love to actually see if there are other bills, I'm sorry, if there are other state constitutions that mirror Vermont where this could be introduced in other states. That would rock. I think I'm going to check my own state constitution. I have had a couple of different listeners email me. Most recently is a fella that he and I email on a pretty regular basis. Dealing with the Ronin AR-15. Now, the Ronin AR-15, just to recap a little bit, the AR system is inherently unreliable because it's finicky. All right? There's several different things that can cause that system to lock up, jam up, whatever it is. Just malfunction. So there's some things that you can do to your gun to make it more reliable, last longer between cleanings. It'll run dirtier. It'll run more types of ammunition. It is just more reliable, and less things on it will malfunction, and a couple of things that are prone to breaking aren't going to break like that. I refer to it as calling it the Ronin status, R-O-N-I-N, right? Now, I did a show on the Ronin AR-15, and what I did was I gave you all of the part numbers and descriptions of all the parts to upgrade your gun to a Ronin AR-15. I have that list posted on the website, 2aradio.com. 2, the number, A, as in amendment, radio, I hope I don't have to spell that, .com, 2aradio.com. And there's a big link that says, click here for the Ronin AR-15 page. Well, do that. Click on that thing. Take a look at it. It'll give you all the part numbers. Now, just so you understand, what is Ronin? What is Ronin? Ronin was a it's a term from the old world Japan, and it was a masterless or lordless samurai. Okay, and they existed for about 600 or 700 years back in Japan until the mid to late 1800s, from around 1200, maybe a little earlier than that, up to not quite 1900. So 600-700 years ish going on around there. Now a samurai would become masterless from the death or fall of his master, or the loss of his master's favor or privilege. So he might not be killed, but he could get the boot. So then these samurais oftentimes went out for hire. They were then considered Ronin because they were masterless. They had the skills, but they weren't given the direction on how to use those skills by their master or lord. So, anyhow, that's where I come up with that name. Real popular movie back in about 89 with, I can see the face. I don't remember the name. Robert De Niro. A great movie. If you haven't seen the movie Ronin, go see it. Matter of fact, just don't even bother renting it. Just go buy it. It's that good. My 2 cents. Okay. So, anyhow, I've had probably 4 or 5 listeners over the last 3 months or so suggest to me there are some drop-in conversions to make your AR-15 a piston drive rather than being operated as a gas drive. It's a gas piston. What happens is, right now, the way that an AR works is the gas comes back through a cylinder and it pushes the bolt to the rear and runs the action. Well, what they do is they drop a piston in there, so the gas pushes the piston and the piston drives it. Now, the reason that's a pretty good idea is the gases are dirty. The AR was designed to run on a carbonless, clean-burning powder. It's the equivalent of if you find the ammunition from Winchester called WinClean. It doesn't leave any carbon over. Here's what carbon is. When you burn, let's say that you have a campfire, right? You throw a bunch of wood on there. At the end of the night, the next morning, there's a bunch of ashes, which is left over. The wood burned completely. The ashes are the deposits left over. It's the carbon, right? The carbon left behind in guns are the ashes left over of the burnt powder. It's not unburnt powder. It's burnt powder. It's the ashes left over. The AR-15 was originally designed to run on powder that burned clean and did not leave any ashes or, in true form, carbon residue. However, it was developed back during the time when McNamara was Secretary of Defense under the Kennedy administration, Johnson administration era. And when they submitted a bid to DuPont, if memory serves correct, to build this clean-burning, carbon-free, when it's burnt, powder, DuPont looked at it and estimated somewhere around a 40% rejection rate because the chemistry was so refined. So McNamara said, you know, screw it, let's just use the ball powder we've had for years. Well, then the guns got all dirty. As a matter of fact, when the original M16 was sent out, it wasn't even sent with a cleaning kit. It didn't work out so good. So they had to change it to the M16A1. Of course, those came with cleaning kits, with a few other changes. Anyhow, suffice it to say, if you have a piston in there instead of the gases going back in there to move the bolt, you don't have the dirt going in. Okay, here's the deal. And what I've had is I've had the listeners suggest, why don't you add the piston drive to the Ronin system? I haven't done it. I don't have a piston drive in mind. I have all the other Ronin mods in mind. The reason I haven't added the piston drive in there, the piston drive changes the essential functioning of the gun. The essential functioning of the standard AR-15 is operated by gas recoil. There is no piston. There's no gas piston. The gas piston is a better system. You can buy many gas piston uppers. Most major manufacturers offer a gas piston upper. Some companies offer a conversion. I understand there's a conversion available at Brownells. That changes that whole operational design for the gun. Now, it's not a huge change, but it is a change. When it comes to the Ronin status on the gun, you can do all of the Ronin stuff to a standard AR-15 or a gas piston AR-15, but you do not need to have the piston drive in there to make it a Ronin status gun. The Ronin status gun is changing out already existing parts. It's not adding anything to the, well, with one exception, with the extractor. I suggest adding the D-ring to the extractor. What the D-ring does is you pull the extractor off. There's a spring in there with a plunger in it. You add the D-ring around it. It changes the angle of the extractor just a little bit, and it gives it about 3 to 4 times the extraction pressures to really make sure that you extract the casing. So the extractor's never going to just fall off or just strip free of the casing. So much, in fact, if anything happens, it would literally rip the back of the casing off. Which, it doesn't really matter what extractor you have, because if it rips the casing off, you're going to have to pound the casing out of the chamber using a dowel rod from the muzzle and a hammer. And if you had a standard extractor without the D-ring, you would have to do that anyhow. But if there is a middle ground, which oftentimes there is, where it's stuck in there in a standard extractor, would either break or slip off the edge. If you have the D-ring and that D-ring goes over the forged, heat-treated, hard-chromed extractor, which is much, much more solid, plus the angle with the D-ring added in there, the casing, the rear lip of the casing is coming out. If the rest of the casing doesn't come out, well, you're still going to have to hammer it out. Otherwise, if there's a lot of middle ground between where a standard extractor would either break or not extract an otherwise stuck round. But if you put the D-ring and the improved extractor in the Ronin mods on there, it will extract the vast majority of those casings. It will not extract only the most extreme of cases, which you'd have to pound anyhow. So that's why to do that. Many modifications for the Ronin. I have not added the piston drive on there because it changes the essential functioning of the gun. It changes the essential functioning from the actual original design. It is a good modification. I like the modification. However, the whole idea behind the Ronin is to simply swap out better parts that work for better reasons to make sure that the gun keeps functioning, fires even the hardest of primers, extracts even the worst of casings, runs when the gun's even a little dirtier. It makes the gun more durable. It does not change the essential functioning of the gun. So that is why I haven't added piston drive to the Ronin mods for the AR-15. So there's your answer. Got a little bit more coming for you after this break. Stay tuned. I'll be back after these messages.
Your right to listen and take action shall not be infringed. The 2A Radio Show with Bill Carnes is back.
Back off, I'll take you on. Headstrong to take on anyone. I know that you are wrong, and this is not when you belong.
All right, guys, there's no secret that the way I see things is the worst egregious piece of filth on planet Earth is a child molester, followed very closely by a politician, and then just above that, a dirty cop. And sometimes, between dirty cops and politicians, they swap to being just above a child molester. That's the way I see things. Good cops, good job. Dirty cops, bad cops, cops that take advantage of their position, I would rather just slap with a salami sandwich. A police officer from NYPD is now seeking police protection because when he opened his locker at the 42nd Precinct, he was greeted with a symbolic death threat from his fellow officers, a mousetrap with his name on it. Now this cop, Frank Pestro, 9-year veteran, was one of three elected precinct delegates to the police union, has been outed as a rat for reporting acts of official corruption ordered by a lieutenant by the name of Susanna Seda, who's formerly the grave shift platoon commander who is mired in a big scandal. This guy, Frank, I'm just going to call him Frank, Palastero, I believe his last name. We're just going to call him Frank for now. He was transferred to another command for his safety, according to a February 21st and 24th New York Daily News article. What happened was this Lieutenant Susan Seda was telling young officers to perjure themselves, ordering them to perjure themselves, write citations for crimes they didn't see or parking violations, driving violations they didn't actually witness. In one case, mess with a gun at a crime scene, all kinds of stuff. So this guy decided to blow the whistle on it. He said, there's a handful of guys on the job who say they've got my back, but there's also people who won't answer my calls, Frank says. My reputation is shot, but I know I did the right thing. Right? His reputation is shot, and his life is in danger because he did the right thing. Okay. Now, although it's unheard of for union reps to do this sort of thing, this guy stood up and did the right thing. He placed three calls in a period of about 3 or 4 months, confidential calls to internal affairs dealing with this situation. When the rat trap was found in his locker, copies of the transcripts from these three confidential calls, were in the mousetrap. Can you believe it? I'd like to close by saying, to those of you within our government, we will be watching you in Congress, the executive, and judicial branches all very closely as we organize to save our freedom, liberty, and country. We will not become the subjects of governmental rule. Stay tuned for the Lendman News Hour coming up next.
Bill will be here tomorrow. Will Your Freedoms? The Two-Way Radio Show, 7 a.m. Pacific, 9 Central, Monday through Friday.